is entitled Storage, Order, and Structure of Memory. Now, the purpose of this information is to help us present information or teach in such a way that the students will remember what we teach them. So the order that we teach in and how we organize the materials that we are teaching, thus how we present the material, affects how well the students will remember. Now, there are three main points here, and then there is a fourth point linked to the third point. Now, first we'll speak of how information is stored in the memory. Now, remember that the memory, there are two different kinds of memory. One is an immediate kind, wherein information is temporarily stored, right? That was represented in our picture as what? Can I remember? Well, yeah, a different picture though. Yeah, the container, right? The flask or the jug. That's a type of memory. That's called short-term memory, where the information is brought. We use also the sometimes we call it to the front of the head, the front of the mind, where it's easily accessed. So when we're putting it, when we're trying to memorize something or something, when we're hearing something for the purpose of learning it, learning it deeply. First, it goes in that flask, which is called short-term memory. And then later, after the information is processed, it's stored in long-term memory. That's like the back of the head. And then when we want to remember something, it has to come out to short-term memory again for it to be used. So, when something is in the long-term memory, or the back of our head, so to speak, there are different ways that it can be, the information can be stored. Now, I've mentioned this in a previous class. You can store not only words in your memory, but you can store fragrances, actual feelings or experiences. You can store pain in the memory. Sometimes when we think about something that happened to us, we actually will wince in pain just remembering what it was like. You can actually, that experience of pain is stored in the long-term memory too. Also, pictures. Information is stored imaginally. That means as images or pictures, and also as sound. Now, in Vedic times, and probably the most effective way to use memory is when things are stored as sound. But it is not very easy to store like that in Kali Yuga. In other words, when in Vedic times, and it seemed to me from my analysis that the mind has to be extremely peaceful to store things in by sound, a lot by sound. And that was the first key of the Vedic era to understand how the Gurukulas and how the students heard from their teachers. They were very, very, very peaceful. There was no agitation in the entire atmosphere. It was not at all like Kali Yuga. Gurukulas or educational institutions, they were never or almost never in a big city. They were by some fresh flowing stream, by a river, by some mountains, where everything was so peaceful. And in that peaceful atmosphere, the students who were surrendered to their teachers, they would just hear the Vedic instructions. And just by that hearing, they could remember it. Their minds were so placid and peaceful that just by that hearing, they would remember the instruction their whole life. Of course, there would be repetition and there would be practice. But basically, it was just by shabda, or sound vibration. And the teacher would speak and they would listen. We have heard also that there were no books prior, because everyone's memory was so sharp, primarily because the age was completely different, the surroundings were full of peace. So in that way, just the sound would be heard, and you could and the students would be able to recall each and every word the teacher was speaking later on in their life, just by they could recall the sound. Sometimes we use, we'll say that, you know, you could almost hear the person's voice in memory. So that the whole, so sound vibration was stored in that way. But I, as far as my experience goes, it's quite difficult to do that very effectively. Although those of you who were brought up in the West, all the rock and roll music that you heard when you were a child or a teenager, it seems like the mind is so soft in those years that even I have the experience of so many devotees, even 15 years after their devotees, every once in a while some Bob Dylan, old Bob Dylan song will pop out of their mouth and they remember all the lyrics from so many different songs from when they were teenagers. But aside from that, information can be stored pictorially, not only as sound and not only as in other using other of the senses, but also pictorially. And pictorially is a very efficient way to store information. Now, I've read books on memory, and interestingly enough, they were Western books. There are books on how to improve your memory that you can buy in any bookstore. But also, I read this one book on the history of memory cultivation. And it seems in monasteries, in Christian monasteries, hundreds of years ago, some of the monks had incredible memories. And much of the, there were many pictures that they would use, symbolic pictures. And they would, these pictures had writing mixed in, and there would be pictures of different, like houses and things like that. In each room there would be so many different biblical sayings and different facts and this and that. And it seems like the monks were very expert at storing things pictorially so that they would memorize the picture, the entire picture. Not memorize every word, but they would memorize the sight of the whole picture. And then they would be able to recall all the details of the picture by storing it as a picture rather than the details bit by bit. Now we can see to some degree how this was done, although in the memory book that I read, it explained that in this day and age they can't even imagine They can't even imagine people being able to memorize things like using these systems, because the atmosphere is so much more agitated nowadays. But you can understand in a very simple way. Now, if you were looking at this picture over here, everyone look at the picture over here of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda. Now, if we were going to write down the details in this picture and try to store them as individual details, so there is Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and there are flower petals, different color flower petals. So if you were thinking of memorizing the elements of this picture, you can memorize flower petals, you can memorize Chaitanya Nittai, and Nittai is wearing a blue dhoti, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu somehow or another is wearing a purple dhoti. And there's a mridanga, and there's someone playing a horn on the right side, and there's an ISKCON tilak thing over here, one of these over here. And there are flags, and there are buildings in the background. So there are so many details that can remember one by one by one by one just by remembering the words. But it's very difficult to actually remember more than 8 or 10 different things in this way. This word by detail by detail by detail. But on the other hand, if you look at the picture very carefully and get that image, the entire picture, the image of the entire picture planted in your memory, like that, and then look away from there, and then you can call up the entire picture in your memory. Can everyone do that? Can anyone see the picture in their memory? Sometimes you can do it with your eyes open, or your eyes closed even. You can see the picture in your memory like that, and then you can describe the picture. Right? And then it would be very easy by describing the picture to come up with more than 8 or 10 details. It would be easier to come up with so much more detail by describing what you see, by storing the information as a picture. Right? And then transferring it to the verbal after, but storing it as a picture instead of verbally. So when one teaches, one uses graphs and charts and pictures to help people remember in this way. And the teacher should remember how much easier it actually is to store things, or more information can be stored pictorially or imaginally than verbally. Does anyone have any questions about that? Yeah.
Also, can one store colors also?
Yeah, of course you can store colors.
Because generally these thoughts, they come black and white, at least to me.
Your pictures? That's because you're older. So you have black and white pictures, but all us young people have color pictures only. We don't even remember black and white.
Yeah,
that's the perfection of the system, to remember the deities. And so many times in the literature of the Goswamis, Krishnadas Kaviraj writing, Rupa Goswami writing, Raghunath Das Goswami writing, there'll be very beautiful pictures in words of Radha and Krishna, Vrindavan. So we have to take those and not try to remember those as words, but we have to transfer them into an image or a picture and actually see the picture. And then we can remember it like that during the day or for many, many days. Sometimes in Gurukula we used to ask the children to do that, to remember the deities. We'd ask them sometimes to think about the deities. Everyone would get the children to close their eyes and think about the deities and what they were wearing today. Who saw Krishna Balaram today? After greeting the deities, raise your hand. Okay. Why don't we? Everyone, close your eyes and try to remember what they were wearing. Were you there?
I was.
Oh. Can you remember yesterday?
So yeah.
Okay. So you can actually, when your eyes are closed and you're thinking about the deities, you can remember the. You know, individually, look at what type of garland they were wearing, and the smile on Lord Balaram's face, the type of crown, the peacock feather on Krishna's head, with the kind of flute Krishna has, whether Balaram had his plow or not, the cows. So in this way, if we actually have a peaceful mind and look at the deity, we could actually store, during greeting the deities, we can store that image in our mind. So valuable. I see sometimes the pilgrims when they come to the Vrindavan temple, and most of them are the village people, they're very simple. And you can see them practically, they'll come up just as a, some of them, come up just as a habit. They're just going for darshan. So what they do when they come up, who knows the first thing they do? First thing they pull the little they unwrap their little pouch and they, you know, pull out 10 paisa and they throw it in. And I've seen that, practically speaking, most of them, they come and they unwrap the pouch and just for about a second they look and they just move on like that. But it's actually a missing of the point. Of course, it is glorious that they're coming from so far to have darshan of Krishna Balaram, Radhe Shyam Gaunatai. But the point is that one should behold the beauty of the deity and allow that beauty to saturate our short-term memory, our long-term memory, and store it in there. And then during the day, and for many days, and many, many days, one can have darshan of the deities at any time of the day. Tadbhava lipsate koyad. Braja lok, no. Tadbhava lipsate koyad. Koyad vashan braja sada. Rupa Goswami recommends that we always live in Vrindavan. And if one cannot live in Vrindavan physically, one should live in Vrindavan mentally. So that means that while in Vrindavan, we go to see Govardhan, we go to see Barshana, Kamavan, so many different places, the Yamuna River, Prabhupada Samadhi. So we should, with a peaceful mind, and you see how you have to have a peaceful mind how to do this properly. Because if the mind is agitated, nothing, no images come in. So with a peaceful mind, we should look and pray so that we can visit Vrindavan for years and years and years, if not physically, just mentally. What?
Remember you were saying yesterday, if you teach us a method and we could
over
15 things?
Yeah.
No, I assume this is it.
No.
Not at all.
We'll see. I haven't forgotten that. You have such a good memory that you remember too.
But the question was, say for example, we want to remember 10 things.
Oh, why don't we wait till that time comes?
I just
wanna, okay. All right.
Can you picture it in your...
Oh, I'll teach you. It's very simple. You want to know right now? Yeah.
What I want to know is using that approach to get a picture. So, for example, somebody tells you, okay, I want you to remember five things. So, you try to picture these five things. And then, see what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, but I'll show you. Yeah, it's a very good way to do it. But I'll show you a good way, using a cereal way to do it. Not cereal meaning eating cereal, but a way that. Anyway, if you're 15 minutes patient, all will be revealed. Okay, timing me, okay. That's what happens when you deal with computer programmers. So one teaching point in this that we should remember is that the atmosphere in a classroom has to be somewhat peaceful. And then if everyone is disturbed, either before they come into classroom or when you're teaching someone, if the atmosphere is disturbing, if everyone isn't relaxed, if the relationship isn't proper between the class and the teacher, then the mind will not be submissive and placid enough to allow this type of remembering to take place. There's whole systems. There's a system that was developed in, I think it was originally developed in Bulgaria, called superlearning. That's the common name from it. Is anyone familiar with this superlearning? Where it's basically a relaxation technique through using music and things like that, and a slow method of giving information, but using these methods, they've had results wherein the students would learn 100 times as much quickly, languages, vocabulary, and things like that. They would learn it. My analysis of the system was that they basically relaxed the mind to an almost hypnotic, almost hypnotized, borderline hypnotic state when the mind was completely peaceful and susceptible. Using music, they would do this in a very calm, peaceful atmosphere. They would do this, relax the mind, and then the teacher would methodically say the words and repeat the words. Very interesting. But they would store the words verbally, not imaginally. Yeah.
So in a system like that, where the learning and everything is being done in a particular level of activity of the brain, in another situation where they're not able to, you know, if they're in an emergency situation or something like that, does that learning still stick? Are they still able to bring it out, or does it have to be within that particular, you know?
Well, there are different ways to have the material learned stay in the memory. You have to find some way to teach in such a way. Repetition helps help it go in there. These are other techniques that can be used. Understanding how the mind and the learning theory should help us. That you have to present things slowly. You can't have one, just like if you were looking at this picture over here trying to understand something from this picture, and immediately we took this picture and put it over there after 2 seconds, and then after that put that there. So there's a disorientation that affects the mind, which also can be somewhat useful in learning. If you see the modern type of slideshows, you know, they flash one image, and just when your mind is sort of trying to understand that image, they flash another image. And it actually throws you off and disorients you, they're giving you impressions very subtly. It's very, very powerful through disorientation, actually. So things will come through, but not on the, on a more subtle level, on an almost an unconscious level. There'll be processed feelings. Feelings store things deeply. When something is emotionally presented, if you can transfer that emotion to the students, 2 and 2 is 4. Yes.
isn't there a thing as subconscious learning? Sometimes you're not all there.
More unconscious learning. Very, very, very. Yeah, there's that type of thing. There's we would call those. You can do very devious things to people like that. As far as teaching in Krishna consciousness, it's not a very good idea. Very dangerous. It's too manipulative. I don't know very much about that. There are subconscious things that every teacher will use, though, to set the mood. Either he may not even be conscious of them. Some teachers, just by their presence, they'll walk in and they have such a deep, grave demeanor that it sets a particular type of a mood. Some people, you immediately see them and you don't like them. And when those people try and teach, automatically, everyone will reject everything that they're saying. Just naturally, this is subconscious, practically speaking. You don't know why, but you're defensive about everything the person is saying. Well, other people, they're so big-hearted, they project that big-heartedness, and everyone is, without even saying anything, one can perceive how sincere they are, and naturally trust them. And then there are insincere people who practice acting sincerely. There's all kinds of... And there are people who are very sincere who may have a little bit of bad karma that make them seem insincere, but actually they are sincere. So everything comes out in time. But there are subconscious things that are done, but I don't really at all recommend consciously doing subconscious things. There's a story that I heard about from the early days in the preaching in Russia, in USSR. Some of the Armenian devotees were very revolutionary. They were hardcore Armenian-Russian revolutionaries. And the fact that it was completely illegal and it was dangerous to preach in Armenia in those days was very... they liked that very much. And... one of the devotees was—he was working in the national television company as an engineer. I can't remember his name though. It was Kamala Mulla. I think his name was either him or his brother. Do you know him? Amazing devotee. And. This doesn't fit in with that topic, unfortunately. This one devotee was an engineer on the television station. So one time the Bolshoi Ballet was on television, right? And and they were dancing around. He, as a sound engineer, he put in the Maha Mantra, and they were all dancing around, and they were. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, something like that. And another time, the newscaster was speaking in Russian and saying something to the effect of, today, President Gorbachev has made a very important announcement, and then he'd stick in, Hare Krishna. And he'd go on in Russian. So changing the subliminally putting Hare Krishna in. Never got caught either. Okay, I'd like to move on a bit. So one of the things is that if you read on page 115, you see on the one paragraph on the top, the two thirsty devotees chanted as they stood on the old wooden bridge and looked at the glistening water of the stream as it washed over polished river stones. Krishna is the taste of water, they both thought. There's so much detailed information and adjectives in there, but just reading it verbally, you don't get any picture. You can't memorize, you can't remember anything, any of the information that's in there. I mean, at least that's my experience. I don't know if you have the same feeling. But it's very difficult to recall the picture. But if you actually saw two devotees chanting, a picture of two devotees chanting on a wooden bridge, looking at the water, and one said, and the water, and the water is going over some rocks. And if you actually just looked at that picture very simply, it would be very easy to recall back in your memory all those details. But trying to memorize details, how we store things in that long-term memory, what orders are used. So we've mentioned three different types of order that things are stored in. One is conceptual order. Things are stored as a concept. One is in some serial order, one after another, after another, after another, and each one connects. And the third one is presented order. So say we're making a presentation and we want the students to, we're saying there are 4 points to remember. 1, 2, or in this particular case, there are 3 points to remember. Now these 3 points of the way that information can be stored, they have one concept that unites them, that there are three different points, three different ways that information is stored in the memory, right? There are three different ways that information is stored in the memory. So we're emphasizing the concept first, that there are three different ways through repetition that information is stored in the memory. The first one is conceptually. And we're linking, by doing it this way, it's like if you remember that picture that we drew, that representative picture of how the different aspects or different information is put in our memory, linked together, and that meets at different points. So under one concept, information stored in the memory, which is linked to that whole five different steps of how we learn something, right? That's one concept, learning theory, then five different steps in how we learn something and how it is stored in the memory. And here are three different aspects or three different ways under that one concept of how things are stored in the memory. One is conceptually, and the second is serial order. And the third is presented order. So I mentioned, or tried to stress a little bit as an example, that there's a concept that links these three together. When you're making a presentation, you should always talk about the concept. Whenever there is a concept that links things, you should talk about the concept so that the three things that you're talking about will be linked to other information. So that's conceptual. Serial order is as in a story. Just like I told that story of Prabhupada preaching where?
Kobe.
In Kobe. Now what was the first thing, what was the first scene? Where was the first thing we talked about? Where was the place? Mahari?
I was going to say about the airplane. Because you got to go train from the airplane.
Okay, then what was after the airplane?
Train.
And what was after the train?
In the hut.
The where?
In the house of this this businessman.
Right. How many floors did it have?
Three
floors. And then where was the next scene?
In the hall.
In the hall. And then the final scene?
apartment.
Back in the apartment. So that's, see, there was philosophy being taught there. And not only there was philosophy, if I wanted to, I could have put in some details of how to defeat Mayavad philosophy. I could have put in some points on how to serve the guru, that he should be offered a garland every day. You can stress those, that type of thing. You could put in specific information. And because it's stored in a story, and in fact, I've seen whole books on how to teach every lesson, make every lesson into a story. And all the information that you're teaching and everything that you want to teach can be presented as part of a story. And just naturally, as you can remember how one part of the story leads to the next part, 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 until the conclusion, just as you can naturally remember the order, you'll be able to pull out all the information from each of the different scenes. And this is why the Mahabharata is written in a story fashion in Kali Yuga. The Bhagavatam is even basically stories. There's so much philosophy in the Bhagavatam. Just like, how many of you are taking the Bhagavatam study course? Raise your hands. Okay. So what chapter are you reading? 13. Now in the 13th chapter, it's about Vidura visiting, coming to visit Dhritarashtra. And by his preaching to Dhritarashtra, he brings him, he makes him renounce living in the house of Yudhisthira Maharaj and go to the forest, and eventually it explains about his death. So this is the storyline. But as if you learn how to study the Bhagavatam properly, in addition to the storyline, there's so much philosophy embedded in each part of the story. Right? Are you learning that? There's so much philosophy embedded in each part of the story, and just by remembering the story, you can pull up so many different philosophical points and details and facts. So, but it has to be carefully embedded. And using a story, using the natural way that the mind can remember things serially, especially time. First this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. By naturally using the time sequence, one can, that the mind stores things in these serial sequences, one can easily teach in such a way that students remember. And the third order, we're back to the way how the mind stores, the intelligence or mind stores information. The third way is presented order. First we learn this, then we learn this, then we learn this, then we learn this. There's no order in presented order, except it's the first thing you learn, then the second. There's no actual conceptual links between the information, and there's no serial or time links or story links between the information either. And it's very difficult to remember things just in presented order. So a teacher should put thought into linking things serially, how they connect to each other, either conceptually or serially, while making a presentation. Now, now I'd like to make some more points. To give you an example, how's my 15 minutes doing? Am I over? Over? How much over? 4 minutes, okay. Then we'll talk a little, to show you some of the amazing nature of serial memory. We'll talk about it, as we said yesterday, our list. Now, I don't know if we'll go for 15 today, although we can do it. I've gone for 10 in the classes before. My only fear about doing this now, there's one more point to remember, and this one's so much fun that no one's going to want to get into the next one that's a little technical. So why don't I do the next one, which is technical. and then we'll have fun memorizing things. So, is that all right? Does anyone? If I ask you, is that all right? No one will. Thank you. You agree, it's all right. But if someone agrees or disagrees, they raise their hand. Either way, you just accept it as agreement. The manipulative nature of the teacher. Why don't you set the watch again and get tired? Thank you for taking 3 minutes. Now, the third thing has to do with the structure of the memory. And to emphasize that last point again, let me just go back to those three over there. What was the third one up there?
Presented on.
And the first one?
Circumstantial.
Right. See, when you emphasize things like that with a little repetition and you tell people, I want you to remember it in this way, it just makes it so much easier for the information to stick in people's mind. Now that third one, presented order, should not be left alone. You should not use that, even though you can't avoid it sometimes. But you should think in terms when you're making a presentation of this type of linking, things either serially or conceptually, and stressing the concept, which has to do with the point right now. Understanding that the intelligence or the memory part of the intelligence is organized systematically, either conceptually or serially. We should teach things in such a way when we are teaching concepts that are conceptually linked. We should teach the concept before we're teaching information. We should teach the concept and then later we teach the information that fits in that concept. Now, if the examples I gave in the book, if I was going to teach about samsara, or I like the one about eternity, it would be important that we, if I was going to teach that the soul is eternal, it's something that we all know, but we know superficially, and it doesn't, when we think about it, it doesn't knock us off our chair, because we forget what eternal means. But if I wanted to make a deep impression in your mind that you are eternal, and there's no need for you to suffer birth, death, old age, and disease. So before teaching this, if I wanted it to go deeply in your consciousness, one way of doing this is to teach you the concept of eternality in such a way that it would strike you deeply. And once teaching you what eternity was, you know what eternity is, but once giving you such a deep impression of what eternity is, then, and that we are eternal, then we can understand very simply that we need not suffer material life. So before teaching these elements, I would want to teach eternity, and then I would teach birth and death, maybe that we get old and death is painful. But first, possibly, I'd want to teach what eternity is. And then I wanted to attach this new concept of eternity to something that you already know. Because you start with the known to teach the unknown. Because if you start teaching the unknown, it remains unknown. But if you compare something that's known to something unknown, people get a glimpse of what the unknown is, and then they understand it, and then you attach other things to that. This is a little tricky, possibly. But eternity, how to teach the concept eternity. what I said in there is to is in the book is that we have a superficial concept of eternity, for example. But how long is eternity? Think of it in the future, that this building is so strong, but in 10 years, in 20 years, in 100 years, in 150 years, in 200 years, it's going to crumble. Or 300 years at most, it's going to crumble. And there are trees that live in California, and there are trees here in Vrindavan that are 5,000 years old. There are trees in California, those redwood trees, that are how old, does anyone know? How? 7,000 years old, but they will one day, in 10,000 years, or in 20,000 years, they will die. Or a mountain will crumble in time. Or the universe in unlimited time almost will be devastated. But we are eternal. We will never ever die. Your father or grandfather has died and his father has died. But you, there is something in you that will never die. Anyway, I'm not being very impressive about eternity. But in any case, the concept of understanding what long periods of time actually is and what eternity actually is, that has to be taught before you teach that the soul is eternal. Because if you teach the soul is eternal without someone understanding what eternal is, what's the use? So there are concepts that are called subsuming. They subsume or cover the information that is being taught. And these concepts have to be taught before the information is taught. Otherwise the information will not stick properly. It will be understood very superficially.
What exactly does this word subsume mean?
It means subsume superficially. Chayurana.
What exactly does this word subsume mean?
It means subsume within. Just like this chalk is subsumed within my hand. It is within it. So there's a concept that of eternity that is necessary to be understood before the fact that the soul is eternal can be held. The overall concept has to be understood before it can hold information. So contained within, subsumed means contained within. Like the ISKCON organization subsumes each temple. They're all contained within the ISKCON organization. So when one is teaching, he has to think in terms of what concepts his students need to know, basic concepts his students need to know before he teaches them so many different things. And it's difficult because especially in preaching to non-devotees, there are so many concepts we take for granted, especially if you live in India and you're preaching in the West. There are so many concepts you get used to everyone just accepting that can't, when speaking to a Westerner, you have to teach the concept first. Reincarnation. There was practically, when I was growing up going to the university, even that concept never entered the philosophical minds of the students. Well, every Indian from the sweeper in the street to the highest politician, what to speak of the philosophers and sadhus, they're born with this concept. The concept of the deity being God. That the deity, this statue, is actually Krishna and Srimati Radharani. That concept is absent from the Western mind almost, practically speaking. So you have to teach certain concepts. The fact that God is a person is practically speaking absent from the Western mind. Or if it's there, it's incorrect. The way it is there, it is incorrect. So these concepts have to be taught so that people actually understand the preaching. The concept has to be taught. So therefore, in the beginning of this series, I tried to teach a little about the concepts of learning theory, so that this information that we were learning afterward have somewhere to be placed, somewhere to be subsumed within. Are there any questions about this?
So, with the difference between a Sunday feast lecture and a Srimad Bhagavatam class, would that be like a Sunday feast would be teaching concepts, whereas the Bhagavatam class to the devotees would be teaching the information?
No, not necessarily. It would be basic concepts and maybe basic information, and more advanced concepts and maybe more advanced information. Because there are so many concepts in advanced Krishna consciousness that we may not understand very deeply or thoroughly or even at all. And it's like the concept of pure devotional service. What is pure devotional service? Does anyone know Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service? We should. There are so many courses that are teaching this. Okay, raise your hand if you know what Rupa Goswami has. He's precisely defined what is pure devotional service. The tattastha lakshana and the sarup lakshana, primary and secondary characteristics. So this is, there are details. So there's pure devotional service. And this is what's necessary. This is all that Krishna practically accepts as pure devotional service. So then there are details in there. So you have to teach something about Krishna, that we're his servant, and we want to serve him. But what does the mood have to be of the service? The mood has to be pure devotional service. And then you can teach Rupa Goswami's definition. So there are some basic concepts that would have to be taught first before one gets into it. And what is the definition? What is the verse? And the verse that Rupa Goswami quotes from Narada Pancharatna, Pancharatra, to back this up. See, just by the concept of pure devotional service, linked to that should be this verse in our mind. There should be this verse linked to that concept in our minds, conceptually. And then we pull out Anyavilasita Sunyam, Janakamar Anavrita, Anakalana Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Uttamam. And then each of those words, there should be other concepts and other information linked.
So does this concept mean some sort of primary realization?
Or? No, I wouldn't call it that. It's what's a concept? Well, let's see, there's a whole area about in teaching about the difference between, I can't remember the technical names for it right this second. Yeah, like, what is this? What am I sitting on? Okay. Now, what is Madan Mohan sitting on? Okay, now, if you look at these two different chairs, But what is the chitta sitting on? Okay, but what is Hasmukh sitting on? A mat. Okay. Now, all four of us are sitting. We're sitting on chairs. He's sitting on an asana. He's sitting on a mat. Now, we're all sitting. Now, what is it? When you see this, you say chair. There's the concept of chair exists in your consciousness. And the concept of asana exists in your consciousness. And the concept of mat. Now, what are the distinguishing characteristics of a chair that distinguishes it from the concept of a mat? See, the mind processes this, intelligence processes this so quickly, but there are distinguishing characteristics of each. There are primary and secondary ones. For instance, there's redness in both the mat and the asan, but redness isn't a primary characteristic that makes one an asan and one a chair. So your question, if Hasmukh was sitting on this with me, would it be still a chair? Is it for one person or two people? So there's all kinds of characteristics of these things, and so one defines what a concept is by primary characteristics, but exactly what the definition of a concept is. What is the primary characteristic of a concept? I can't think of right now, but I think everyone knows what a concept is. Like Prabhupada said one time, someone asked him, who taught God in Italy? So he said, if you understand the concept of God, there is no question of who taught God. So, it's quite an abstraction. But it's something that the intelligence uses in its reasoning and thinking and storage. Okay, now let us turn at this moment to serial memory, and how powerful is serial memory? Now the first principle I would like to mention here, and it's already been mentioned. But serial order is more or less glue between two items. And certain elements make the glue very strong. So in a story, tension will make the glue very strong between one incident and another incident and another incident and another incident. Emotion makes the glue very strong. So if you pull the first element, if there's emotion connecting each incident, every incident one will follow the other. Now, excitement, extraordinariness. This glues one incident to another. That means if you remember one incident, then there's extraordinariness attached to it, to between one incident and another incident. You remember one and then you'll naturally remember the other. We can use this simple technique in memorization, even of something very simple. Now, I'll give you an example. Why don't we write down, pick five things, a list of five things. Give me one.
Mridanga.
Huh?
Mridanga.
Mridanga, okay. You don't have to write it down. I'll do the writing on this one. Second one?
Cup.
Cup. Any kind of cup?
Stainless steel
cup. This one right over here. Okay, but don't use things that we can see. That makes it too easy.
Copper cup?
No, okay. You can copper cup.
Orange.
An orange, okay.
You're ready.
Huh?
And Mridanga is there.
Yes, it's there. Nothing we can do about that. Okay, how about a neem tree? And a monkey. Okay. Okay. Now, these things don't have any, all they have to link them, Mridanga, cup, orange, neem tree, monkey, they're all things maybe in Vrindavan. But aside from that, there's no conceptual linked to them, right? There's no subsuming, except that they're all composed of the material energy, except the monkey and the neem tree. They have also spiritual energy, the spirit soul in them too. And there's no conceptual link, there's no serial link, right? So if I wanted to memorize these things, and I didn't want to just rely on presented order, I would try to make a serial link between them. And here's a simple technique of doing it. I think of a mudanga in my mind, without looking at that mudanga particularly. Everyone think of a mudanga in your mind. You have to see the mudanga, right? See the mudanga in your mind. Okay. Then visualize it exploding. And out of the mudanga comes the next item. What do we want? Steel cups? Steel cups, okay? Steel cups, or the mudanga explodes, and what's there is one shiny steel cup. Now see that. You have to see the mudanga exploding, and when it explodes, you see a shining, you see the effulgence coming from the steel cup, because it's so shiny. Does it have a top on it, like this one does? Okay, it has a top on it, steel cup with top. Okay, you open the top of the steel cup in your mind, right? You open the top, and inside, you look inside, and there's a huge orange, okay? And all you can see is this huge orange. And then, miraculously enough, when you cut the orange, and it opens like this, there's a neem tree blossoming in it. And it can even grow right before your very eyes. From that little orange, this huge, or as big, and then a huge neem tree grows. You have to see all this. The trick is storing this in your mind visually, not in the words. And you actually have to visualize it and see it, right? So you open up the orange. Well, actually, I didn't stress the visuals of the cup. You open the cup. Actually, that one was pretty good. You look inside, what do you see?
Orange.
And then what happens when you...
That's a neem tree.
And it opens up and a big neem tree grows. And of course, it's obvious, what's at the top of the neem tree? But it's not an ordinary monkey. He's huge and he's going... Okay, what's the next item? The next item, pick... What's the next item? Quick, Devaki. A boat. Okay, a boat. On top of the monkey, and the monkey, because he's going like this, right? On top of his head is a boat. Did you ever see a monkey with a boat on the top of his head? It has sails. The boat has sails, too. And when what's the next item?
Television.
A television. And on the sail, you have to see this now. The on top of the monkey's head is the boat, and on the sails of the sailboat, if you look, there's your favorite television program on the television. Okay? Now, I don't remember how many items we just did. Just seven. Okay, that's seven. Now, without looking, now what? The first item, who remembers the first item? Nitai. A mudanga. Now, what happens to the mudanga?
Explodes.
Don't look at any list you've written down. And what happens there?
Steel cup.
And then what happens to the steel cup?
You open it.
You open it up, and what's there?
Orange.
You're looking down at the big orange, right? And then what happens?
That is open tree for a neem tree.
Okay.
Neem
tree. And then?
There's a monkey.
A monkey on the top, and what's on top? And what's the monkey standing like that? And then?
He's got a boat on
his head. A boat on his head, and what's the next item? A television. Okay. And then it's easy, if there was another item, there would be something on television, or the television would explode, and 50,000 saffron dhotis would come falling to the ground, or something like that. Each dhoti would turn into a parachute, and at the bottom of the parachute, there would be Srimad Bhagavatams. And there would be Srimad Bhagavatams landing in, where? Napoli. Yeah, in Napoli, in Naples. in the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and then it would fall, and then the Empire State Buildings would be there, and one after another, these items can be added on. And you could literally, if you visualize each one, you can not only memorize 10 things, if you make the connection between them extraordinary enough, without any difficulty, you can memorize 20 things, 50 things. Okay, let's try 15, okay? Does anyone have any questions about the concept? Now, don't write anything down. But the trick is visualization, and visualize, we'll say one item, and then you have to think of something extraordinary.
Can we still be remembering this, let's say, next week, you say Nidanga?
Well, just, I mean, just like everyone remembers what...
Radha.
Okay, what does it stand for?
Radha.
Radha.
Madha.
And what else?
And
mnemonic. Okay, yes, you can do that, but usually it fades after 7 or 8 years. No. If you don't refresh it, it will fade, because you don't want it to be there particularly, these lists. But if you wanted to do something, you can use these kind of tricks with memorizing slokas to some degree. Okay. I'll be the only one who writes down. Your job is to listen and connect one thing with an extraordinary funny thing. Keep them funny, that's the easiest way. An extraordinary and bigger than life. Try to keep away from mudangas when machine guns coming out and shooting people and violence and improper activities, because that really pollutes the mind. But just extraordinary, funny type of things. Okay, you ready? First one will be Yamuna River. See the Yamuna River. I won't give any more instruction after this. Grapes. Grapes. Pen. US dollar 100 bill. One bill, $100 bill. A foot. The color red. Sword. A chair. The Atlantic Ocean. Hanuman. A diamond necklace. Cartels. Tilak.
and nimble pani. A rickshaw. Okay. That's 15. Okay, take a piece of paper and see how you do. If anyone needs help remembering the first one, sometimes you need you need help?
Yes. You have to be in the same order.
Well, it will probably make it easier. If you can remember them in the same order, it's easier. If not, it's all right. When you finish, raise your hand.
How many?
I had 15. How many did you get? Raise your hand if you need more time. Okay, let's go over them. The first one was? Okay. How did you connect? Show you right now. How did you connect that one to the next one?
As on the banks of Jamuna, there's a
grape.
There's a
bush. Okay. Grapes, what was the next one? What did you see? Raise your hand. Pen, how did you connect it? Squashing a grape and finding a pen inside. Next, after pen?
$100
bill. How did you connect?
Well, I found grapes and I write it down.
For the pen.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Somebody wants $100 for this.
Wow. It's pretty good. How many did you write? Okay, what was after the $100?
Foot.
Well, how did you connect $100 with a foot?
Well, the Yamuna River turned into a $100 bill. I mean, there was this big foot that stood on it.
Stood on the Yamuna.
Wow.
No, the $100 bill.
On the $100 bill. Okay. Next. The red. Ah, boy. And then red?
Sword.
And then how did you get from red to sword? Yeah.
I thought in the red foot that someone was starting
with a sword. That wasn't his Krishna's foot, we hope. And then, after sword?
Chair.
And then? Well, how did you get to chair from sword?
Tired of sword.
Sat down in a chair. Many fell in the Atlantic Ocean. And then, after Atlantic Ocean? Marsh? Haruman flying across the ocean. Next was? After Hanuman was the diamond necklace. How did you get from Hanuman to the diamond necklace? Anyone have an extraordinary way?
Madhubi? He was wearing it around his neck.
Hanuman was wearing a diamond necklace around his neck. What did it look like?
Glittering and shiny.
And then?
Cartels.
Cartels.
I just pictured Hanuman was usually just touching the ocean, he was flying above, and his cartels were so heavy as fun.
And then from cartels to?
Tilak.
Tilak. And then from Tilak to? And then get on a rickshaw and go home. So you can use these if you want to undergo the trouble. Sometimes you can use them, you know, if you think of something you have to do and you don't want to take the trouble to write it down, so you can think of a rickshaw and then putting a big pumpkin in the rickshaw and flying all the way to Loy Bazaar and getting the thing you need, or it's very easy. There's also other systems where you can link them with numbers. And then you can think of the first thing I have to do, the second thing, third thing, fourth thing. It's clever, isn't it? Without any trouble, you can memorize long lists.
Yeah, you mentioned that this is also useful to memorizing slokas.
Not this one. Not so much like that. Sometimes in the beginning, before the sloka is established strongly in the mind, because for me most of the Sanskrit words they're abstract. It means it's hard to I can't link them to anything. They don't have any meaning because they're just sounds. I don't have any, like an English word like chair has meaning to me. What's the Sanskrit word for chair? Anyone know? Huh? What? Huh? Asan. Yeah, it's asan. So someone who doesn't know what asan means, it doesn't mean anything. What's the Bengali word? You know Bengali? No Bengali. So in any case, you can't. It's hard to link something unless it has some meaning for you. So what I would do is I'll find an English word that rhymes with it, that has meaning, that the rhymingness will link me from the English word to the Sanskrit word, and then I have to think of something with the English word. Things like that. I'd like to talk about that, about how devotees memorize slokas, what tricks they use. Anyone have any tricks they'd like to share? Mnemonic devices?
No, the tricks were when Nanda was giving a sloka class, and I don't remember the I was talking about sacrifice. And I used to memorize, to visualize, like, that right in the middle of the room there was a big fire, sacrifice, and it was getting hot, and there was very nice picture.
But you don't remember what the sloka was. It didn't work for you, huh? You didn't get hot anymore. But at least he remembered it.
Great technique.
Huh?
Indeed, for some time.
Yeah.
Save it on refreshes.
Yeah. It gets dusty and you can't pull it out anymore.
A sannyasi once told a story, and it was about remembering shlokas. And he said that the best way, or so he found anyway, was to write one in the morning and keep it in your pocket, in your spare time, just keep looking at it, reading it. And by the end of the day, you will have learned it.
If you look at it.
Yeah, if you learn, if you won't really learn it, that is one of the ways.
Nice.
What about you get this sloka, you tape it out, and before you go to sleep, you put the sloka on, you hear it while you sleep, and the morning you forget it.
Subconscious.
I never find anything that easy myself. Nothing that easy works for me. Huh?
How do you do it?
How do I do it?
Yes.
Well, when I'm doing well, I find that when my mind isn't very peaceful, I don't do it very well at all. And I have a very difficult time learning slokas. But when my mind is peaceful, repetition and I think that's the key thing, your mind being peaceful. Because then it will stick. It sticks in there. And then I use repetition. I have books that I write this Sanskrit in blue and the English in red, and I never memorize myself. I never memorize translations. I memorize the words, the key words, and I get an approximate understanding of the English by the Sanskrit words. Things like that. But I find that the more one does something like memorize slokas, it gets much easier.
You mentioned a couple of times how being peaceful helps memorization. We also mentioned how sometimes being distracted, an example of the music coming in,
if the cup isn't there to catch the water coming down.
Yeah, sometimes some tension can also help memorization.
The what can?
Some tension, the rapid, or just not neurotically, but that way, but rapid, not so peaceful, seems also to help push things in deeply.
Something intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, intense rather than. Yeah. Okay, why don't we take 5 minutes and everyone write for 5 minutes? Write down something about the class, about this class, what you learned. Also, we're going to need 4 devotees to help mark the test tomorrow evening. And then we'll have them for everyone on Monday. In addition, we can have the test on this information on Tuesday, I think. Is that all right, or is Monday better than Tuesday? On Tuesday. And for Monday, read problem ownership. How many of you are missing page 124, by the way? I'm missing page 124. They didn't photocopy it. So if you're missing page 124, go get it from the office, the DIHE office. So read from 119 to 128.
Is it supposed
to
be method for the test?
No. This is not on the test. Read from 119 to 128. This last topic we're going to do about listening is very interesting and extremely important from the teachers and just for devotees in general. So read the material carefully. So take 5 minutes to write now, and then class dismissed.
What page number?
The page numbers to 118 is the end, and 101.